Bitcoin solves a very unique problem, and it has every reason to be decentralized, trustless, and all that jive. But a lot of these other projects don't.
That is Dennis Graham, and this is episode 23 of the Blockchain Pro podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 23 of the Blockchain Pro podcast. I'm Adriana Bellotti and today's guest is Dennis Graham. Dennis is not only a marketing machine, as you will find out, but he's also the person who introduced me to the concept of Bitcoin. I remember walking down Macquarie Street in Sydney back in 2013 and discussing this new currency of the internet. That is what sent me down this rabbit hole. And here we are. Now it's your turn to get to know Dennis. Let's go. Hey Dennis.
Hello Adriana, how are you doing?
I'm alright, how are you doing?
Very good, thank you.
Alright, let's go back in time. Tell me how you began your marketing career.
Yeah, so my marketing career, it began really when I ran my own startups. And yeah, back in like 2005, around that time, a friend from high school and I, we started a bunch of social networking websites together. We had the number one social networking site in Macedonia. So the most popular social...
Ooh, shout out to Macedonia. What was the name of the site?
Prijatelji.com.mk. And so until Facebook came along and killed us and all the other social networking sites out there. Started off in social networking, but we basically threw a bunch of spaghetti against the wall, and we had a Christian social networking site, Jewish social networking site, we had one for Serbians, Croatians, we had a girls-only social networking site. So we like had the template and we just kind of put it into different niches. Was a success for a good couple of years when all the social networking sites were booming. But eventually Facebook took everyone over, including our sites in Macedonia and all over the world. And the GFC happened. And then after that, I had to leave Macedonia and Russia and Greece, where I was traveling around while I was running the sites, and came back to Australia, and that's where I got my first corporate gig.
All right. And how long between that and now working in crypto?
Coming back to Australia, that was back in 2008. 2009 is, I think, when I got my first corporate gig, which was working in finance for a credit union, now a mutual bank. I've had a string of jobs in finance and startups. I think that's a really broad category, but that's where all of those jobs have been. And I think that's pretty much how all of those jobs have really led me to working in crypto.
And how did you get this crypto job that you have now? Well, tell us about it.
Yeah, so it was through a bit of serendipity. I was forwarded a job description, and so I thought, yeah, why not? I'll give it a crack. And, it didn't say who the job was for and what it was all about, apart from the marketing duties. And so I applied for the job, and I said, hey there, I was forwarded this job description from a friend of mine, and I just have a few prerequisites, and one of those was not to work for a Ponzi scheme. So I just after the 2017-18 bubble, a lot of crazy crypto companies with big aspirations and little substance behind it came up, and so I didn't want to work for one of those, and I said, look, I want to work for a legitimate company. And so he got back to me after a couple of weeks. He had a cold for that time. He said, "Yeah, no worries. It's not a Ponzi scheme of any kind. It's a cryptocurrency exchange, one of Australia's largest." And he gave me the sheet of, what's going on there. And he said, "I was about to go for in for an interview," and so I did. And next minute, I got a job there.
So now you work for Independent Reserve.
Yep, Independent Reserve, one of Australia's largest cryptocurrency exchanges.
And what is your favorite thing about this role?
Yeah, a few things really. So, number one, I like working in somewhat of a startup environment. I wouldn't really call it a startup anymore. It's been around for something close to 7 years, so it's pretty much a fully fledged business now, but it still has that startup vibe about it. So the team in the office is pretty small, but we have a bunch of staff across Australia and around the world. But it's still got that, essence of a startup, which is something that I really like, because working in like tech startups, the mentality is different when it comes to management, what you're allowed to do, and just the scope of the work that you do as well. So if you work in, say, a corporate organization or some big lethargic place like a credit union or a bank or something similar, it's really slow moving. You have a lot of people there. Not to be too disparaging of people in, corporates and things like that, but I'll just say they're not as motivated. The other thing is, when you're working for an organization that's fairly new, and I've had a lot of startup experience. I think I've worked for maybe four startup organizations, and just the culture is very different. It's a lot more really performance driven. And you also run a much tighter ship. So it means two things. Number one, every dollar that you spend has to count. And number two, the scope of the work that you do is a lot more broad. So whilst working for like a telco or, some big brand name organization might have some sort of clout because, hey, you've worked for this big organization, but the reality is a lot of the work that is done in those organizations is really business as usual, humdrum. You don't see a lot of innovation and not as much push for performance as you do in startups, and that's because these organizations are well established and they're just happy to kind of chug along, whilst in these smaller, much more agile companies, you see a lot more. Well, number one, you might feel a lot more pressure to perform, which I think is a good thing. It's the kind of environment that I thrive in. And yeah, you just get a lot more experience across everything. And so, having worked in so many startup organizations where the staff count isn't necessarily too large for marketing, you get a lot more experience doing a lot more stuff, and you figure out what works a lot more quickly.
So the number one thing, favorite thing in this new role is like the pace of things.
Yeah, the pace of things.
And being able to.
Yeah, you just have. So, if you are the type of person that wants to experiment with different marketing channels, if you want something, or if you want a day job where every day looks different from the next, startups are the way to go. It doesn't matter if it's really crypto or any other space. But yeah, crypto comes with a lot more challenges as well.
Yeah, I guess especially when it comes to experimenting with marketing channels, there are a lot of restrictions when it comes to marketing crypto products.
Yeah.
How do you overcome those?
Yeah, so for the listeners at home, like just to give you some flavor of as to the type of restrictions that we have. So number one, the most popular channel for any digital marketer is Google Ads. So search engine marketing ads. So when you go into Google and you do your little search, say buy Bitcoin in Australia, crypto companies are excluded from marketing. So it means we have that major channel no longer available to us. And in addition to that, LinkedIn, Twitter, and a handful of other channels do not permit any sort of crypto, digital currency, blockchain advertising. So what that really means is you have to start becoming a lot more creative with how you find success when it comes to marketing. So yeah, definitely a lot more challenges compared to any other run-of-the-mill company.
Is this a regulatory issue, or is that like the advertising industry self-regulating? And are there any like specific regulatory issues that marketers that are looking to work in the crypto space need to look at?
So it's a combination of both, but first and foremost, it is a self-regulation thing that the platforms impose. So Google is not compelled by any legislation to restrict crypto and blockchain advertising, but it's something that they do themselves. And that's because of, you know, post 2017, 2018,
the ICO boom, the scam boom.
Yeah, the scam boom. And so in order to protect the users, Google and other platforms, advertising platforms, have made the decision that they're going to just restrict all crypto advertising, because it's much easier to do that than to try and figure out which one's legit and which one's not legit. So that's the first thing. And secondly, in regards to the regulatory front of advertising restrictions, it really falls into the same realm as any other financial advice or financial advertising. So we cannot give financial advice, for example, right? So we cannot say, hey, invest in Bitcoin, it has grown so much, or anything along those lines. So we still have to comply with your standard requirements that comes with advertising, especially in the financial world. And a lot of that is about not giving financial advice and, yeah, just being upfront with people. And the other flip side of it is just being controlled by the advertising platforms.
So if it's not financial advice, what is it? Financial recommendation?
No, it's not even financial recommendations. We don't even necessarily give recommendations. At the end of the day, like where I work at, Independent Reserve, we're a cryptocurrency exchange. What is a cryptocurrency exchange? It's a platform on which you can get into crypto. So if you are a man or woman on the street and you want to get into Bitcoin, Ethereum, whatever your flavor of crypto, we provide the on-ramps for that. So my job as a marketer is really to make sure that the general public is aware that Independent Reserve exists, and B, that they should choose us for a number of reasons, like we've got insurance, deep liquidity, very fast to sign up, very high security, that sort of thing. So my job is not really about giving advice, it's about awareness. And as things progress, more and more people are jumping into cryptocurrency. So in 2019, we did introduce something called the Independent Reserve Cryptocurrency Index. And what this was is a cross-sectional survey of Australian users, or actually just the Australian public in general. So they didn't have to be independent reserve customers. They could have been anyone across Australia.
Is that a survey?
It was a survey.
Did you do that from using an independent research company?
Exactly. So okay. We used an independent survey company, and we kind of said, look, we want to do a survey of Australians, and we want it to be as cross-sectional as we possibly could. So what that means is we get an even spread of people between the ages of 18 to 25, 26 to 35, and so on and so forth. So we have...
And also gender?
And gender as well. So we wanted a 50-50 mix there as well. And what came out of the survey was that there's a surprisingly large number of people in Australia, at least, that have some cryptocurrency. So off the top of my head, I think 16.7% of respondents said that they had some cryptocurrency. Do they all have a whole Bitcoin each? No, I don't think so. Like if I was to think about my own experience with Bitcoin, I've given away tons of Bitcoin to friends and acquaintances and things like that. Actually, I bought a fridge maybe a couple of years ago off Gumtree and had a guy help me move it to my place off Gumtree as well. Anyway, after he helped me move it, I was talking to him in the car and I'm like, hey, man, have you heard about Bitcoin?
Story of my life.
And he's like, what's it all about? And I'm like, yeah, it's like the future of currency. It's pretty good. It just keeps on rising in value. But this was like around 2017. So, you know, every time I looked at my balance in terms of relative to fiat, it just kept on going up. And so this guy, I had to log. I helped him, of course, but we lugged this fridge up three flights of stairs. And I said, look, man, I'm going to give you a tip, but it's not going to be in dollars. I'm going to give you some Bitcoin. And all I can tell you is that you got to do your own research. And I helped him set up a wallet and, you know, do his thing. And I said, like, look, man, make sure you remember your password. Get everything set up because this is, like, really important. And then I gave him, like, $50 at that time.
$50?
$50.
That's probably more than what you pay for the fridge now.
Yep, because it definitely kept on booming after that. And, so I introduced him to Bitcoin that way. And sometimes I might be at a, you know, barbecue or something like that. And... yeah, try and introduce people to Bitcoin. And that could, so not to lose track of, lose sight of things, essentially, you know, we've got these millions of people with Bitcoin or Ethereum or XRP or one of these other cryptos. And it doesn't mean they own like thousands of dollars of it. Some of them might own just $50, like, you know, the guy who helped me move the fridge, or, you know, some other mate who I might have given $5 or $10 to. You know, just to get them started on that journey. It's very prolific in Australia, at least.
So you talk to your friends and family about Bitcoin. How have these conversations evolved over time?
Yeah, they definitely have evolved. And it's in part because of my journey in marketing and crypto. And my message when I talk to people about crypto and Bitcoin and whatnot is a lot more simplified. You know, when you talk to the hardcore Bitcoin people, they want to talk about decentralization, trustless, and things like that, right? And all of these things mean absolutely zero to the man and woman on the street. They're like, as soon as you mention decentralized, what the F does that mean? And it really means nothing to them. And just to give you a little example, a few months ago, I was having some drinks in the city, playing some pool with a friend of mine, and I was having a cigarette break because I love my cigarette breaks. And there was these two guys there, and they were from Iran, and they just started a bit of a conversation, like, you know, hey man, what are you doing? And I'm like, hey man, I'm working in the crypto space. And there were these two guys there, right? And one of them was a big, let's call it, crypto denier. And he's like, man, crypto, Bitcoin, it's all a scam, blah, blah, blah. And this other guy is, I could see in his eyes, he's a believer. And he's like, you know, I'm having a discussion with him, and he's like, nah, the disbeliever, right? He's like, it's all a scam. And so what I do is I simplify it to the most basic of things. Screw that whole decentralized conversation. Screw that thing trustless and, you know, whatever. I kind of go, you know what Bitcoin is? It's money. Quite simply, it is digital money. And he's holding a drink in his hand. And I go to him, how did you pay for that drink? Did you PayWave and, you know, do contactless payment with his Visa debit card or credit card? And
or
he's
phone.
Like, or phone. And he's like, yeah. And I go, okay, so you paid digitally for this drink. And did you see your money disappear from your bank account to, you know, the bar? And he's like, well, no. And I'm like, okay. And I go to him, do you know what percentage of money in Australia is digital? I'm just talking about plain old fiat. What percentage is digital? And he's like, no. And I told him it's about 93%. So 93% of money is digital. It's not plastic or, you know, paper money that you carry around in your pocket. It's all digital. And I said, the difference between Bitcoin and what you did is very minimal, right? It's digital. You can't really see it, touch it, feel it, taste it. And if you wanted to pay for something, you do more or less the same transaction as you did to pay for that drink. And I feel like it blew his mind, right? He's like, ah, you know, he's like, well, that's interesting. And all of a sudden, you know, I could see I might have not necessarily made him a Bitcoin maximalist. But, you know, I got the wheels in his head, like, turning. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's interesting. You know, most of the money that I spend, I don't see. And that's the same thing I try and tell everybody. It's just money that you don't see. Because one of the things that I often get when talking to people about Bitcoin and crypto in general is that they don't understand how it all works, you know, what's the technology behind it. And, you know, a lot of the people who are hardcore in the community, they always want to start that conversation really deep, right? They're like, all right, so there was this guy called Satoshi. And, you know, he came around during the GFC. And he had enough of this shit. And, you know, and they'll get
Man,
into
the... I love Satoshi, for the record.
And they'll get into the decentralized and the trustless and all that mumbo-jumbo. And it just goes well over the top of everybody's heads.
I agree. That is very complicated for a first conversation. Keeping it simple is the best option.
Yeah, and that's all I do. I just keep it simple, and I just say, hey man, it's just like money, but it sort of seems to increase in value. You know, I remember when Bitcoin started booming around 2017, and, you know, I'd go to the bar. It's under renovation at the moment, but the Metro, you know the Metro well.
Yeah, I know the Metro pretty well.
And, you know, these guys accept crypto, and it'd be just the most amazing thing. I'd go buy a round of drinks and dinner. You know, it might cost me $50. And you know, I pay in Bitcoin and next minute in a day or two, it seems like I've got that $50 back. Just
So have they. But that's
yep.
the thing. Your meal is worth twice for you and for them because, you know, you spend $50, the next day you have $100 in your account because Bitcoin increased in value, but also you spend $50 and then the next day they have $100 in their account because
Exactly.
Bitcoin is increased in value. So that is pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. Yeah. And but I guess also just in terms of marketing realm, you know, at the end of the day, that's what I do. You know, my world is not really about trying to convert hardcore believers in cryptocurrency to come and join Independent Reserve. The way I see it, the future's about getting the normies or, you know, the man and woman on the street and all the kids and whatever in between to kind of go, hey, Bitcoin's a thing. And if they want to get into it, Independent Reserve's the way to do it. Yeah, so when I market or do my marketing, I'm not trying to get pull people off other exchanges. What I'm really trying to do is get people who have had some exposure to Bitcoin but haven't made their first investment yet to come on board into Independent Reserve. And I think more broadly, that's what every crypto company should be doing, right? Because some of these you know, blockchain projects, when I go to their website and I try to figure out what the hell is it that they do, you know, as a guy who's pretty technical, who's pretty clued up on the blockchain and the whole space, you know, I struggle to figure out what the hell these guys even do.
Everybody does.
Everybody does. And that's because they're not talking to the people on the street, they're talking to themselves essentially. And I think more broadly speaking, yeah, if people want, or let's call it, if the marketing people and the business owners of all of these blockchain firms want to see further adoption, they have to change the way that they talk. They have to go more street. And you know, when the somebody comes up and they're like, "Hey, yo, what's up? Your blockchain project, what's all about?" And they have to be like, "Aight, let's keep it real. It's basically like money, but it's a little bit more funky, you know what I mean?" And so just keep it street. Not necessarily, you don't have to necessarily talk like Ali G. But you know, just like really explain in everyday terms what the problem is and why you have an actual solution. Because I think everywhere that I look, that's the biggest problem that I see. That these people can't explain it in layman terms.
I think that sort of answers my next question, which is if you could change one thing in the blockchain ecosystem, what would it be?
Yeah, that's 100% correct. It'd be start talking to people in everyday terms. And I also feel like some of these blockchain companies have to get real with themselves. Like, everybody wants to put everything on the blockchain these days, right? You know, how many times did you go to the toilet? Let's put it on the blockchain. And there's no need for that, right?
Unless we're in, you know, pandemic times and there's no toilet paper
Yeah.
left. So maybe we should be considering a blockchain solution to track toilet paper. And
No.
I'm just kidding,
No.
okay?
Yeah, there's a lot of solutions that are out there that serve no purpose on the blockchain, right? They're just like complex databases that could be just done in a centralized way. You know, Bitcoin solves a very unique problem, and it has every reason to be decentralized, trustless, and all that jive. But a lot of these other projects don't.
So, Any final words of wisdom for any marketers that are considering a job in the blockchain industry? How do they go about it?
Yeah, look,
resources?
I think at a much higher level, you have to be passionate about marketing and analytics and exploring new ways of doing things, because I've dealt with literally hundreds of marketers, right, through conferences, events, people that I've worked with, hundreds and hundreds of marketers. And the reality is, a lot of the marketers don't want to push themselves. They don't want to learn new things. What's a good example? Like Google Analytics or Excel spreadsheets. You know, a lot of marketing people don't know how to find their way around a spreadsheet and don't know how to find their way around Google Analytics. So I'd say if you want to get into the space, chances are you're going to have to work for an organization that's, you know, let's call it in startup mode. And because they're in startup mode, it means you have to go above and beyond whatever you might normally be comfortable with in a normal marketing environment, which is just like, yeah, we'll just send out this newsletter once a month and, you know, we'll just put in, we'll keep on putting more budget into this thing. You have to really get creative in how you find solutions to your problems. You really have to refine how you write, right? To everyday people to make sure that they understand what is it that you're saying, and you're not just speaking in an echo chamber. You really have to speak to the whole world in a way that's really easy to understand.
So get analytical and write well in simple terms.
Get analytical, write well, and think outside the square. Because when you haven't got Google ads, when you haven't got LinkedIn ads, when you haven't got Twitter ads, you've got half your major go-to channels as a traditional marketer completely cut off from you. And as a result, you have to start thinking a lot more creatively about how you're going to get visibility and traction.
That's really good advice. Thank you so much.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
And that was Dennis Graham. You can connect with him on Twitter or LinkedIn. I put his profile links on the description. Send him questions or comments. Let him know you heard him here. If you learned something new today or was entertained, please tell your mates. Write a review. Share it with your followers. It all helps me get the word out. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you at the next block.